session number 21116, Reel 5.
Sidnus or Reel 5. The troops in the front part of the ship were three decks down, 3, 2, 1. Each one's compartment, you couldn't get in between. To reach the, from the front, the men had to come up three flights of stairs to the deck, cross the open deck to get to the rest of the ship. We carried on sailing, sailing west, and we for about 2.5-3 days. They turned south and eventually we joined up with another convoy coming from America. We steamed east and came in through the Straits of Gibraltar and landed at Oran. We unloaded at Oran off the passenger ships, went into transit, into American transit camp, and we had to wait for a few days for the ship carrying our B vehicles, our heavy vehicles. The Americans treated us very well in their camp, fed us well. We met quite a lot of Americans that had been wounded. They had been wounded in action and had been in hospital and were waiting to go back to their units. They were quite subdued up to the normal boisterous Americans. They had quite a rough time. They met the American army, and there was the first time in action, and they'd had a pretty good pasting. They spoke very well of the guards, because they actually was in action at Longstop, where the guards had captured the hill, handed it over to the Americans, and the Americans had been counterattacked by the Germans and driven off. The guards took the hill again, handed it over to the Americans, and again the Americans were driven off by the Germans, and they suddenly realised that it was not as easy as they thought it was going to be. But they treated us quite well. We eventually got the trucks off a steamer, and we formed a convoy, and we went over the mountains onto a plane to a town called Mascara. The idea of the plane was that we could make aerodromes or landing strips on this plane to be used when we get the gliders. Mascara, very, very small town. We was all building in tents on the plane, very dusty. We used to get the small cyclones used to come through the camp quite regular, bringing dust, lifting the tents. We eventually heard that the gliders had started to arrive. Now, we couldn't get the British gliders. The British gliders were built in a solid piece, and the idea was they would be used from UK to attack Europe. But they had a heck of a long way to be towed from UK, and they hadn't got the planes available to do it. So it was decided that we should use the American gliders, the Wackos. The Wackos were knocked down into four crates, so they could be transported in four crates, and they could be reassembled when they reached situ. The Wackos were a different design from ours completely. They had a tubular metal frame, canvas covered. The wing itself was wood. It was made honeycombed inside in 3-ply. This was a lucky thing because it meant that they floated fairly well. The wings actually were not buoyant enough to hold the glider up. The two pilots sat at the front, and you could actually lift the complete, you could swivel the nose upwards and get a jeep to drive and drive a jeep or push a jeep into it, and they could get the jeep out the same way. The Americans came, showed us how to assemble them, and eventually they were assembled, and as they were assembled, they were tested. They were stowed away and tested. We then got American pilots started to arrive, and American planes. The planes were the Dakota. It was originally a passenger plane, the DC-3, and they'd been conscripted, complete with their crews. Their crews had been, the chief pilot was made a captain, the second pilot was made a lieutenant. The planes were gutted and string seats put in, painted khaki, and that was it. They flew from America to North Africa. The one thing was fairly obvious to start with, it was a bit of a trouble. They hadn't been trained in navigation, because the reason they didn't train in navigation was on the airlines in America, each aerodrome, each town had a radio beacon. So they simply flew on the radio beacon until they arrived at the place. It was difficult because no radio beacons were in Sicily. The British supplied a good number of Albemarle planes, which were a two-engine plane that had been used as a bomber. They were pretty useless as a bomber, but they'd been converted to drop parachutists, pathfinder parachutists, and to tow gliders. The RAF pilots were trained in navigation, so it was decided that they would have to form trains in the sky. The people that could navigate would lead a string. The planes themselves would fly with the blue lights on the wings, small blue lights on the wings, so that the glider can actually see the towing plane, because the operation was designed to be flown at night. So they didn't get lost. They had to form this train, and they wanted to keep the other in sight visually. They was flying at different heights. There was going to be three heights to be flown: 4,000 feet, 1,008, 1,004. The whole idea being that on the dropping zone, which was at Syracuse in Cyprus, there were four dropping zones. The nearest one to the coast was number two, and so the planes that going on to number two flew at 1,004. The next one inland was number one, and they flew at 1,008. The other two were much nearer the bridge that we were going to attack, and they and the crews flew in at 8,000. The whole idea was that the glider would be cast off from the plane before it crossed the coast. Therefore, the higher they were, the farther they could glide. The idea why they didn't cross the coast was because after the glider operation, on nights after that, and the one after that on three nights, there was going to be parachute drops, and the planes that were towing us were going to drop the parachutists. But the whole idea was that if they didn't cross the coast, they weren't liable to be shot down, and there was a great shortage of planes. We practiced on the planes at Mascara, and eventually the people flew the planes and told the infantry, and the infantry were the border regiment, and the border regiment and the South Staffs. They flew up from Mascara to near Sousse in Tunisia. The rest of us came up by rope convoy. The hostilities in Africa finished, and so that it was a straightforward drive in convoy, quite a long way. And then we set up camps in the Sousse area. The built a number of landing strips for the takeoff with the gliders, and the unit I was with, the City of London Yeomanry, they was the anti-aircraft people, and they set their guns up round the actual landing strips to give air defence. There wasn't enough British pilots to fly the plane, so a number of the American pilots volunteered to fly a second pilot with the British. Because at the same night as we operated, the American gliders were also going into Cyprus, but much further to the west than we was. We was going to land it near Syracuse. The idea of the operation was that we should capture a bridge which was just south of Syracuse. The South Staffs would be dropped nearest, and they would capture and hold the bridge. The Border Regiment, who had dropped near the coast, would motor across the bridge and attack Syracuse. Capture Syracuse and hold it so the Navy could move in smartish. And at the same time, they had to hold the bridge to make sure that the convoy that was landing by sea could have a free run, that to stop, make sure the Germans didn't blow the bridge. It sounds very nice. It sounded quite easy plan until you actually start. How I came to be mixed up in it was that the fact that I had been the fitter sergeant with the Border Regiment for 3 years just prior to us leaving England. The WACO could only carry a 6-pounder anti-tank gun. It couldn't carry the trailer to tow it. It couldn't carry the jeep to tow it, I should say, which makes it rather awkward. You'd have to land a jeep with a gun, the jeep would then to search around for the gun. Owing to the shortage of planes, the Border Regiment decided they could only take 4 6-pounder anti-tank guns. But realizing that they'd have difficulty finding the guns with the jeeps, they decided to send 6 jeeps, so there'd be an actual surplus. With a bit of luck, every jeep would find a gun, and they could move. The guns were very heavy. You had drag ropes, but it's very difficult with a small crew to actually move this heavy gun. And it was the only decent weapon, the only heavy weapons we had. The Border Regiment contacted the Creamy, which was the colonel of the Royal Electrical Mechanical Engineers, who was my immediate boss, and asked if they could borrow me back for this operation, so that we could have myself and the chappie that had taken over from me, we could travel in a glider with gun fitters and also spare gunners and signallers with the radios, and we should have much better chance of maybe of finding the guns. We expected to have casualties. We expected a lot of gliders wouldn't arrive there. But it was one of those things. The 9th, if I remember rightly, it was the 9th of July, and we actually took off at about just after 7 o'clock at the evening. We circled until we formed up the strings, found the right height, formed up and started to fly across the Med. I believe they said it would be about 450 miles, which is quite a distance. They also said there should be some moon, but it was still dark. Quite soon, we started to have troubles. We had difficulty actually keeping up with the actual string of the planes. It only needed one plane to swerve slightly, and you could immediately get a break in the train. the people that were following didn't, if they didn't know where they were, they were just actually just flying on a compass bearing, and a compass bearing has no accuracy. We flew round to the south of Malta, turned round Malta, then flew north into Syracuse. The idea in going round Malta was that they worked out the radar on Cyprus, would see the planes flying towards Malta, and with hoping they would assume that they were simply a resupply of Malta and not an attack coming in to Sicily. The things went pretty haywire for us when we made Sicily. We came around to Sicily. We got cast off. We coming in quite low. We only just made the land. We landed probably about 200 or 300 yards from the sea, and we immediately hit either a wall or an old building. There was a load of stones in the place, and we came to a sudden halt, and the front of the glider was badly damaged. The two pilots were injured, both had broken legs. And we also had trouble then. We immediately came out, took up positions round the thing, and started trying to open the front to get out the Jeep. Couldn't move it. It was so damaged we couldn't possibly get the Jeep out. So there was always there's a axe on the thing, so you could chop the thing away. We decided to try to cut the Jeep out of the glider. We started doing this, and then we suddenly came under fire from the Italians. The Italians had coastal batteries all the way down the coast, and we'd overflown them by not much at all. So we came under fire. We had to pull back. We had to leave both pilots there, because we couldn't take them with us. We had to leave the Jeep, because we couldn't take that. So there was myself, a gunfitter, there was three artillerymen and two signallers with radios. The radios didn't work. It's one thing you find that in operation, you don't really land a glider, you crash it. And the radios were still the old valve radios, and they didn't seem to take much hard banging at all. So we had no radio. We were playing tag with the Italians, was moving away from the coast. They were following us. We then heard firing, quite heavy firing, to ahead of us and to the right. So we assumed that this would be the bridge. And that the staffs would be in action. So we marched towards the gunfire. We started to pick up other people. The gliders had been scattered all over the place. We started picking up other members, and eventually we became about 29 strong, and we had a lieutenant from the staffs who took over our bunch, and we started to form a defensive position to the south as the Italians were coming in from the coast towards the bridge, and we set up a position to hold them away. We had no heavy weapons, and we was being mortared, light mortars and machine gunned. But we hung on to the place, and eventually more people gradually came in. It was obvious that everything had gone wrong, because no way, although the staffs had captured the bridge and got to the other side, they was attacked by the Germans from the north, and we just couldn't raise enough men of the border regiment to cross the bridge to attack the town itself, the town and port. In fact, they had all the effort they could to hang on to the bridge. Eventually, the sea people who had landed behind us came up the road, and once they came up the road, they went across the bridge, and we came out of action. We was very small in number. We'd taken quite a few casualties. We then had the job of rounding up our wounded, rounding up prisoners, Italian prisoners who were surrendering in large numbers. We hung around for 2 days in the Syracuse area. Syracuse was taken by the seaborne people. Ships began to sail into Syracuse, and we came out 3 days later. We were put on a boat from Syracuse, came back to North Africa. Once we got back to North Africa, we met the other people. We found out that it had been an absolute fiasco as far as the number of people and number of gliders that reached the island. But at the same time, it must have been a success because we held the bridge, and so the people from the south could get through. On the count up afterwards, we was told that 72 gliders with Border Regiment took off. One landed in Malta, 7 landed in Africa, 44 went into the sea, and 20 landed in Sicily. Some of those that landed in the sea landed very close to the island. They just failed to glide far enough, and so they landed. In some cases, they landed and could swim ashore. But we had a terrible lot of men drowned. Some of the people that dropped into the sea were standing on the wings, and some were very lucky. They got picked up by a convoy coming from Egypt back to UK. They sent the convoy through at this time of the invasion, as they thought that the bombers would be too occupied with the invasion to attack the convoy. And they actually picked some people up off the gliders as they were floating in the Med. Back to North Africa, back into training for the next operation. We were then told the next place we was going to go in was to Taranto, the naval port in the heel of Italy. We was going to go by sea because there was not enough gliders to be used. We was going to go by landing craft. Also, there was going to be with us, there was going to be 4 cruisers, some minesweepers, and landing craft. The cruisers, one was the Dido, I can remember, and the other one was the Penelope, that was nicknamed Pepper Pot. It had so many patches on. They also said we should have a battleship over the skyline, beyond us, to give support. We never saw it. We don't know whether it was there or not. Anyway, the time came. The invasion of Italy started from the Tour. They crossed from Sicily to the Tour, and we set off from Bizerta to go into Taranto. On the 8th, Italians surrendered. They signed a surrender, which was lucky because we was pretty close to Taranto on the 8th. We landed on the 9th, and we actually sailed up the same swept channel, mineswept channel, as the Italian Navy was coming out to surrender at Malta. They was coming out with guns fore and aft. They was flying a black flag. We was going in the opposite direction. And I can remember people saying they hope the Italians didn't change their mind. There were some beautiful ships, absolutely beautiful looking ships, quite big ships, cruisers, battleships, all coming out. We was going in with four little cruisers and minesweepers and landing craft. We got into Taranto, anchored up, no casualties, and then shortly after we'd anchored up, one of the minesweepers blew up. They reckoned that they must have anchored over a magnetic mine, and for some reason or other, it had exploded. It blew up, and it took with it most of our artillery, some of the medics, and quite a few of few paras that was on the minesweeper. Quite a lot were killed and also drowned, but they were the only casualties on the invasion. The next casualty was the division commander. He shot off in a jeep out of the town, supposed to be doing a recce, which he shouldn't have done. The commanding officer should never go out the front. He's got reconnaissance troops which do that, but he got ambushed and killed, and so he was second casualty. We started to move out towards a port, Goya de Col, which was a few miles north from Taranto. The tasks was to take Bari, which a port, Brindisi, I think that was the other port we had to take, and finish up at there was a plane, not an airplane, a plane which had a number of aerodromes on, and that was at I can't think of the name of it. It was our place to we had to reach and take. The aerodromes were approximately 80 to 100 miles north of Taranto.
This is not Foggia, is it?
Foggia. Actually, it is. The aerodromes at Foggia. We bumped into Popsky's private army. There was about 60 men with a commander who was a Russian-born, but he was a Belgian officer. It formed his own private army and being taken over by the British. And they had the task of taking Brindisi, of taking Barry. Taking Barry. We carried on, moved up, not had much defence at all for Germans, because the German parachute regiment was in front of us, and they were gradually retreating north, and we were following them. Eventually, we made the aerodromes. We captured the aerodromes, and we sat there until the Eighth Army broke out from the opposite side of Italy and came across to relieve us. It was not a heavy battle. We didn't take many casualties because they was gradually retreating because we were outnumbered the defenders. The Italians, of course, had changed sides. Some of them, some regiments came over and wanted to join us. One regiment that was the ones with the wear the feathers in the hat, the Alpini, the mountain troops. They were some of the better Italian troops, and they wanted to come over and fight with us against the Germans. We sat around until the Eighth Army came across and took over, and then they started to pull back to Taranto with the idea we should come back to UK, get ready for the next operations, which would be from UK. The last people to pull out from was the Rough Riders, City of London Yeomanry, the Rough Riders, and because they had they'd been doing the anti-aircraft defence for these aerodromes, we pulled back down to Taranto. It was now getting quite cold. We staged up in Taranto itself, waiting to form a convoy to come back to UK. We were supposed to be home before Christmas. The convoy formed up. We sailed out, and as we came out of Taranto, the ship I was on picked up a cable around one of the propellers. We could only make a very small speed, so we pulled in into Augusta, which is in Sicily, and a naval diver went down to have a look, see if he could get the rope off. He couldn't, so we staggered across the Med back to Bizerta, and we left the convoy and sailed into Bizerta. The rest of the convoy carried on to UK. From Bizerta, we travelled by train to Algiers. 4 days.